Good evening, everybody. I'm an addict and Andrew. Well, firstly, I'm really grateful to be clean. And I'm grateful to be asked to share thanks, Dean. I was really fortunate enough, as a result of just keep coming back here, you know, to have got to a clean time last week. And I was here in my home group, and I did a birthday share. And I just remember locking off halfway through. It was just like, I've got nothing to say, man. Do you know what I mean? Right? Just like, you know, and yet all week I'm dealing with, you know, it's just a thought, it's just a feeling, it's just, you know. And yeah, and I mean, I carried on regardless, you know, and then it was just irrational thinking, you know, and he was talking about it earlier, you know, this period of being before the age of 0 and 7. And yeah, you know, that's good information, it's what I know anyway, you know, at least what I've heard, you know, and yet, I think, you know, I've just got a particular way of thinking and a particular way in terms of language and a particular way in terms of how I relate to myself and sometimes the world around me, that what often happens is it's just always already automatic. It's like it just comes up. So, you know, normally it's not, you know, my illness doesn't look at what I am doing, it looks at what I'm not doing. But I'm able to then reflect and look at what I am doing. It looks at what I haven't got rather than what I have got. And so therefore I need to then keep pulling it back to look at what I have got. Yeah. You know, I need to just keep remembering that when I'm comparing me to another, that often the reflection of another person is them on the outside, and what I'm considering or what that's coming up against is how I'm feeling on the inside. And so therefore I always fall short. You know, and where my comparing needs to be is what happened when I walked in here and where am I now? You know, and that's the true reality and the nature of, and the wonders of what NA can do for us all, you know. And everything that I walked in this door with, I've still got. It's not gone anywhere. You know, dishonesty, manipulation, devious, greed, lust, you know, they're all there. They've not gone anywhere. You know, I'm just, I keep coming here and day by day in my normal everyday life, you know, carrying this stuff out into my normal life, I'm just doing my best to apply a principle, and knowing that, you know, what's going to happen is that principles in my life are going to become a little bit more ordinary in terms of who I become as an individual, and what's going to happen is the defects are therefore just going to not eradicate but come down on some level. But I know that I'm able to harm people just in the same way. It might look different, but I'm still able to harm people in the same way that I did when I was in my using, without a doubt, you know. And so I keep coming here because I want to be the best individual that I can be, really. I want to, you know, keep looking. I have a willingness to want to keep looking. You know, when I think about freedom from active addiction, you know, active addiction for many people who are new about being out there, you know, being caught up in the way that I was. And using substances, and finding a solution in a substance, and then that same solution becoming a problem. And then for me, you know, on many occasions during my life, right back to 1989 was the first time we went to rehab, you know, and I came out of 1989 and 1993, and I'm really fortunate and blessed and lucky that the last one was in 2005, you know, and so I just keep coming, and I just keep having a go, and I just keep working, and try and do what I can do with whatever it is that I'm hearing from people in here, whatever it is in terms of my willingness to keep looking into this literature and wherever else I might find something that might be of use to me. You know, I think everything's here, but I'm only able to go as far as what I'm able with what's here, and then sometimes I might need to then look elsewhere, you know, into other methodologies or whatever, and I have a willingness to do that too. You know, I mean, my experience a lot of this stuff, you know, even if I look right back into some of the early sort of Buddhist type stuff or wherever you might be, any sort of book, you know, and I'm not talking about a religion as such, but just a way in being, I think all of them are talking pretty much about the same thing. And I know that one thing, Jesus wasn't a Christian and Muhammad wasn't a Muslim and Buddha wasn't a Buddhist, you know, but what they probably were is people that were role models out in their community that somehow were being able to find an awakening of sorts that used to be able to do things that other people couldn't do, and I don't know about that. I don't know it's fact, and it don't really matter. Do you know what I mean? You know, And so I was, there's been some stuff I was reading just recently. I've come here tonight, and I've come here with most of the people, apart from my guy on the second row, and so thank you for coming. And, you know, people have, the one thing that the fellowships, you know, always showed up in my life, you know, and the people in the fellowship, you know, and it is the people in the fellowship, really. You know, and these two guys at the end here, me, Romeo, celebrated 14 years last week, the week before, and Simon, 14 years in January. You know, and virtually, I would say, at least 75% of our recovery, I mean, you know, we've been in relationships, married and whatever, but for the most, we've done it together. You know, I think we hung out together for about 2 or 3 years, you know, all the time, around each other's houses, you know, doing this stuff, numerous commitments, you know, getting really involved, finding an energy, you know, finding the willingness even sometimes where there wasn't to be of service, you know, and understanding that in the doing of service is something that happens to my being, you know, and because what I'm wanting is to improve who I be, then I need to do something, you know. And so what I do is I do that by coming here, I have a willingness to sponsor, I have a willingness to be of service and do any of the other stuff that I need to do, you know. And it's not because, oh, you know, I might be better at it than someone else, or look at me, or anything like that. I just understand that it's a good thing for me to be doing, because my experience is when I'm not doing that of a true nature on some level, then what happens is, you know, I get on in life. I crack on, you know, I go to work, I'm fully self-supporting in my own life. Tradition 7's very alive and all that sort of stuff, but it's like, you know, I start feeling at dis-ease with myself, and then I start feeling at dis-ease with others, and then, you know, that recovery and relapse in the basic text is a great analogy of people with long time, what starts to happen sometimes, being around here, judging other people, you know, trying to put other people to rights. Yeah, we're a bunch of weirdos, us lot, sometimes, you know, it's like, I sit there putting other people down, and I look at me on step four, six, and eight, and think that's somehow, you know, it's like throwing the stones in glass houses, isn't it, do you know what I mean? You know, like misfits, misfits, do you know what I mean? You know, and the one thing that I know is that anybody that I have a problem with anyway is because it's my problem, it's something that I've either got, or something that I've had, or something that I can be. You know, and so therefore what I try to do is place it outside of myself, which straight away is an insanity of step two, that somehow, one, I believe the solution exists outside of myself, but two, the problem exists outside of myself, because the problem doesn't exist with others, things, people or places. It exists in me, my interpretation and meaning that I attach to what's happening. And so therefore, it's not a problem with others, it's a problem with me, you know. And then I want to start making it about them, and, you know, and it's not about them. And every time I put it out there and it starts to become about them, I've lost it, you know. I've lost my power, because I don't believe I'm powerless. You know, I'm powerless in terms of, you know, sort of people, places and things, but I believe I've got a lot of power, you know. And if we look at step one, it does tell us that, you know. It says we were, it doesn't say I am. It says we were powerless over our addiction. Our life had become unmanageable. So it's not saying unmanageable, it's saying I can be unmanageable, and I certainly was unmanageable, and I know that anyway. You know, I look at my using, it told me I couldn't use successfully, no matter how many more times I tried it, and I was doing it for about 27 years, you know. And then I get that in the early doors and the first step one and unmanageability, yeah. Go into prison. Okay, so Richard, you're on a probation order, and if you don't turn up to this group, there's a potential you'll go to prison. All right, so I get up in the morning, probation group, using. Nah, you know, and it's like, so, you know, I get that, and I didn't turn up for things, you know, I didn't even turn up for life, I didn't turn up before even getting in recovery. One of the things that I love about what we do with you is tradition three, that the only requirement for membership's a desire to stop using. You know, my journey into recovery this time was of a nature of someone else's urine, putting it in the microwave, back home, and then keeping it at a certain temperature until I got to the drug and alcohol services, and then giving it to them and coming up clean. And all this time I was bang at it, you know. And they were telling me that I had to do this, I had to do that, and I had to get there, and then I could go into treatment. So I lied my whole way, right down to the time I could go into treatment, and I got my funding on someone else's urine, being manipulative, devious, and all this sort of thing, and dishonest. Cool. And I came into treatment, and 14 years later, I'm still studying. You know, so we can't measure a desire. Because if a desire comes from the experience of other people, then, you know, it's like, I can't measure desire, I can't measure anyone's desire. You know, I love the fact that we're able to be here, and sometimes we're able to be here for parents and to bring the children, and sometimes we're here for the, you know, and we might get someone that's still using in the meeting, and, you know, I want them here. And
right, does
good stuff. Yeah. Keep coming back, man. I'm glad that you're here, bro, you know. Good stuff, I mean. So, you know, the people are important, you know, and I don't want to give up on people, and, you know, and I don't want people to give up on me. And so fundamentally, if I need people to be here for me, I mean, I just know inadvertently I have to be there for them. You know, and my illness doesn't want me to be. It just wants me to get here late, go home early, and be self-centered and selfish. You know, like somehow I've got it all together. You know, it's that same old thing, isn't it? It's like we go to a meeting, it's like, I don't need a meeting tonight, I don't need anything. Well, you might not, but someone else might. You know, and it's like, fucking hell. You know, it's like spin the letter right in its head. Because, you know, that self-centred, selfish part of me is still all here. You know, it's not going anywhere. And it's like, and that's why I keep coming here. You know, and so I need to be here. You know, I'm under no illusion at all. That I'm under no illusion at all. That, you know, if it wasn't for my friends, it wasn't for the NA Fellowship, it wasn't for the opportunity that I've had, that I would still be clean today, without a doubt. I come here because I need NA. NA doesn't need me, but I also acknowledge a small part that I play in being here. You know, they might need you. We do need you, mate. You know? So, and so I'm here. You know, when I think about powerlessness and manageability in the same sense of what I was just talking about earlier, you know, what I think about today is that any time I'm often feeling at dis-ease with myself, you know, it's often a result because what I'm not doing is applying the principle of powerlessness in my life. And so what happens is I go out to try and control things that are external to myself, or even try and control things that are internal to myself. And what happens is I become internally unmanageable. And then I start feeling some stuff, and it's like, okay, what do I need to do? You know, I wouldn't have had a clue about none of that stuff if I hadn't kept coming here and I hadn't stayed clean. You know, not a clue about none of it. You know, and it is completely insane. It's like, I was saying this last week, and about 2 years ago, I had a bit of a difficult time. I split up with someone in the fellowship. And I've got nothing at all bad to say about her or anybody else. You know, I believe that to say anything bad about anybody that I've ever been out with is only a reflection of me. Because it's, how come I invite that into my life? You know, it's like, what is it about me that keeps bringing that into my life? You know, and what happened is in the breakup of that relationship, it was really painful. You know, I remember coming to the rooms and coming to my home group, and I remember sitting and crying like a baby. My ego was hurt. You know, I don't even know that I was in love anymore, but my ego was hurt. It was someone that I've been with for a long time, shared a lot of things with, and it was hurting. And all the time, the fellowship stood up. You know, not everybody, but not everybody needs to. But there was people that was here, and they saw me through that. But something really remarkable for me happened in all that. And what happened is that I realised at a point in which I was out doing some meditation. You know, I heard this guy share at a European convention. I think he was from Wales. It was a few years ago when we held it out at Birmingham. And I remember him saying that, you know, with long-term clean time, you know, without meditation, some sort of understanding of a God in your life, you know, it can get really painful. You know, and if we just don't slow down and get connected and start understanding a little more about, you know, what it is that we're reaching out to, or what is it that's going on. And I remember going to this monastery and I was meditating, and I just reached this point of just thinking, this is bullshit, man. It was like coming in here and coming into NA and just having this complete attachment, I think, all the time to this thing that I call my illness. Like somehow it was, everything it was saying was the truth to me. And somehow I had to come here and tell you, and then somehow it released it, and it did. You know, it released it momentarily, but what happened is this stuff kept showing up. And I see the stuff that Bex was talking about, you know. And I've been through a lot of things in my life. When I was younger, I was sexually abused, physically abused. I went through a hell of a lot of stuff, you know. But I don't hold none of that. I don't hold none of that dear. That's all right, man. I don't hold none of that dear, you know. Or it doesn't put me in a place of victim. And, I don't say it for effect. It actually has no bearing on who I am today, if I'm completely honest. You know, I've managed to be able to work through all that stuff. But that's where it belongs. You know, it belongs there. But what I do remember, I've got a secondary illness where I've got a trapped nerve in the brain, and so I walk slightly different to other people. And I remember being on the school playground at the age of 6 years old, and this is at 0 to 7 year, you know. And And I remember getting picked last for this relay race. I fucking hated sports at school. I don't know about you others that got picked last for a relay race and stuff, but it was fucking terrible. Anyway, I remember in that moment that I remember thinking, you're different to everybody else. You know, and it doesn't matter whether, for me, whether you're different, you're unlovable, you're stupid. It all comes under the same bracket of you're not good enough on some level. And I remember having this and then going out into the world from there on. And I didn't, you know, in the Talmud it says we do not see things as they are, we see them as we are. And we do not hear things as they are, we hear them as we are. And what that was telling me is that I didn't see what it was that was happening in the world, and I didn't hear what it was that people were saying to me. What I did hear is you're not good enough. What I did hear is that you're different. And then I started to understand why my reactions or my, you know, to other people or outside stuff that was going on and where it was coming from. It was because I wasn't setting reality. I was setting an interpretation, a meaning that I got given to something, you know, or something that happened at the age of 6 years old. So it wasn't the fact that I got picked last for the relay race that started to run my life. It was the meaning and the interpretation that I gave it. In other words, I was running my whole life out of something that I made up from the age of 6 years old. Fucking hell. You know what I mean? And that was powerful, finding that out. Fucking hell, you mean I've lived out my whole life out of an interpretation? You know? It was like, it didn't even happen. Not good enough has never happened. You see, what happens is I came to understand that there's a distinction between having a thought and being a thought. Being a thought is sitting in this room, listening to everything my disease tells me in terms, I'm not good enough, I don't fit in, I can't socialise, and that is completely being the thought. It's an attachment to it like somehow it's real, and that is me. And then there's something about having a thought about not being good enough, having a thought about not fitting in, having a thought about not being able to socialise, and noticing it's just a thought. Ah, there's that thought about not being good enough. Okay, great, see you. Thanks for sharing. You know, it's like, and but what happened is that I felt like if I hadn't slowed down at the period in which I was saying during that painful stuff and listened to what was happening in the room at that time, like that guy was sharing that, then one arrived at this position. And I also realised that how what I did in my life and my job description and what I had and who I thought I was, again, wrapped in mind, ego, you know. And that was who I was. And I came to also understand that when I felt like this, I could quite easily come down here. And then I could easily quite go up there, and then I'll come down here again. Why? Because the nature of mind is that it goes up and it goes down, it goes up and it goes down, and it goes up and it goes down. And I think when I think shit, I feel shit. When I think positive, I feel positive. And so therefore, I'm just like this, you know. This is graph, man. This is a real good test. What a gift, mate.
Right. All right. Right.
You know. I don't blame him either. I don't blame him either. We love you, bro. All right, so... So anyway, you know, like the so what happened in this whole process anyway is that I decided I was going. You know, it was like I just felt like it wasn't okay for me to keep sitting in here, having an attachment to this thing that I identified as a disease of addiction, speaking about it like the like everything it tells me was real. When I noticed that actually it wasn't real, it was a thought. You know. And that was real powerful to me. You know, because there was a complete difference between being everything my mind tells me and having thoughts about what everything that my mind tells me. In that moment, what I did is I gave up my job, I gave up my house, I gave up my car, I gave up everything I owned, I gave up a lot of my clothes, and I went to Thailand for a year with a suitcase and a half. You know? And why did I do it? Because what I came to understand is that the solution exists outside of myself, and while I'm permanently putting the ideals and the idea of my growth being on things that exist outside of myself, it's insane, you know? And it's the same insanity that it talks about in step two, that somehow the solution to everything that I have exists outside of myself. Now, it doesn't mean that I don't want a nice house to live in. It doesn't mean that I don't want things. It doesn't mean that I want to buy clothes. It doesn't mean that I don't want a nice car. It doesn't mean any of that. But what it does mean, as long as I don't get caught in this stuff, isn't about making me happy, but it's a byproduct that I keep coming back to NA. You know, and there's a difference. But as quickly as it comes, I also need, if I need to, in terms of my own sanity, have to have the ability to also give it up. You know, and go and do what's right for me. And because I was in a painful place, and because then in that pain, I then retired up to my brain, I then started to become obsessed and I started to become compulsed. I started to look for things about who was getting likes on Facebook, where I wasn't getting likes on Facebook. All of a sudden, I was seeing this fucking divide, whether it was two or that happened right across the fellowship, you know. And it was fucking painful. you know, and the people that I thought that might have been there wasn't there, and some of the people that I thought, you know, wouldn't have been there was there, and it doesn't matter, it's all fucking noise, you know, it's all word salad, it's just fucking word salad, you know, it's just meanings, and, you know, it's a bit like all the stuff that happened to me in my life. I remember, you know, by the time I'd done my third time in rehab, you know, I used to go into rehab and they used to go, so Richard, tell me what happened to you when you was a child. And I start fucking nuttering all and puking all this stuff out. Yeah, and that's about as much energy that is that it had. I told the story that many times that I thought if I could tell it some more and even maybe find a tear for it, that somehow I'll never have to use again. And so I talked and talked and talked, you know. And it was like, and then I'd go out and use, you know. So it's like, you know. But I suppose what I'm trying to say is that it's that point and that bridge at which you just, you know, you do what you do. And it's not that it isn't important. It's not that we don't go through trauma. It's not that we don't go through abuse. It's not that we don't suffer in you, because some of us do. And then deal with it and get present, man. And this was the thing for me. You know, it was like I needed to go get present. All this stuff was just so loud. I was obsessed. I was compulsive. I was in pain. I was touching my ego. And I went out to Thailand and I've got another sponsor and I started working the steps out in Thailand. And I was fortunate enough and blessed enough that everything that I've been learned here, you know, I was employable. So I got a job in Thailand and I started working with addicts in Thailand again. I went on some retreats in Thailand, you know. I was doing step work, you know, and looking at the nature of a God of my understanding, you know, from wherever that might have been, loads and loads of places. I had a beautiful time over there. And, you know, and in that moment, even in them times, you know, having to maintain my relationships back in here in England and maintain my relationships with my friends and being on FaceTime with, you know, three of the people that are in this room, you know, and so, you know, it was amazing. It was amazing. And what happened is after that year, I've just been able to slow my life down a little bit, you know, because I was privileged to have a big life before I went over there, you know. I was like, you know, I had a large job anyway, let's put it out there. The rest of it's all noise as well, so I won't even go there. But anyway, I had this job and there was a lot of responsibility, a lot of travelling, a lot of, you know, managing stuff and blah, blah, blah. And I did, I got lost, man. I got lost, you know. One of the things that happened in that relationship, and even though I did many things that were also very loving and very thoughtful and very kind, I had an opportunity to father, I had an opportunity to fall in love. You know, but when I took my inventory, and that's all I did do in that moment, in that breakup, long before I went to Thailand, but what I realised is that somehow I wasn't able to love because I wasn't able to love me. And I wasn't able to give time because I didn't have time for me. And I wasn't able to be empathic because I didn't have empathy for me. I'd lost myself. I stopped putting the pen to the paper. I'd stopped looking, really, I suppose. I was going through the ritual, I was still attending the fellowship, you know, I still had sponsors, still doing a bit of service. But somehow, my life was just so busy, I'd lost it. You know, no judgment, no right, no wrong, no good, no bad, just, it, you know, what it is. It is what it is, you know. But thank God I had enough in the tank to have the ability to be able to let go of everything that I placed the importance on at that time and go away and do something about that. And so I needed to find a relationship with myself, with it again, within the steps. I was able to then, you know, reach a place where I started to feel comfortable in my own skin, you know. And then after about a year, I decided I was going to come home. And this is how lovely the fellowship is, you know. And I knew that I'd done the work and the legwork beforehand because of the, you know, the things that were given to me on my return home. And it wasn't a plan to go out there for a year. It wasn't a plan to go out there for a day. It wasn't a plan to go out there for 10 years. I just knew that I needed to do something. I went and did that something. And when I came home, it just felt right. You know, it just felt right where I wanted to be. You know, it's like my relationships in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I can't beat them anywhere. It's like even when I went to Thailand, I had some friends out there, but it wasn't my friends back either. You know what I mean? You know, my family wasn't out there. All them things that were important to me wasn't out there. You know, and so then I chose to come back. You know, and I was happy when I did come back. But what happened is, you know, I come back homeless, jobless, carless, and fucking a lot of other thingless, you know. And the thing that I was probably more or less of was mindless, you know, but at least it wasn't mindful, you know what I mean? And you know, one of my friends stood up in Liverpool, and he gave me his car for a couple of months, and I've still got it now, actually, at home, but I'm not driving it at the moment, but I've still got it, you know. He lent me his car, he said, here's some keys, take the car. Another one of my friends said, here's the keys to my flat, have them for a month, you know, and he was there living with his mate and all that. You are a gift, bro. Right, you're a gift. And,
And so, you know, and then, so yeah, so the car and the house, and then what had happened is before I went away, this geezer who has a treatment centre down in Portsmouth, he said to me, look, if you come back, we'd love to have you with us, you know, come and let me know. So before I come back, I'd emailed a couple of people, I'd entered for some jobs in other areas as well, and got these interviews all set up and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, when I got back, I just decided, you know, that I was going to stay local, I wasn't going to do that. I was covering mass areas, you know, I have been blessed. I've really been blessed to create value in the lives of many people, challenge many systems, challenge many ethics, work, policy, practice, in terms of defending, supporting, marginalising, discriminating people. And, you know, it's really one of my values, you know. I felt like I was being done to for a lot of years, and rather than being done with, and I just felt like I was an out, and I wanted to give some of this stuff back to others, you know. And I was given a platform in which to do it in many services, and that's why I did it. Because it sat with what's right with me, what I value, you know, the morals that I learned to uncover in NA, you know. And so here I am, I've been back, what, I come back April the 15th, May the 15th, June, July, August, yeah. So 5 months, you know, and I've just, you know, I've managed someone else to just give me another car, I've got another one coming, but it don't mean anything, but it's nice, you know. I just got another house, I've just done it all up, and, you know, and got some really nice stuff in there, and that don't mean anything, but it's warm, you know. And, you know, and I've come back, took on some more sponsors, took on some more service, I'm at my home group, I'm doing what I'm doing, and I'm connected again. And does that mean I'm not fearful? No, it doesn't. Does that mean I don't get anxiety? No, it doesn't. But it's not about not getting it, it's about not wanting it, you know. That's the problem. See, because I can talk about acceptance all day long, and then what happens is I feel uncomfortable and somehow I want to try to remove it. It's the same neurological pathway that I used to do when I was using. I thought something, I felt something, and I wanted to use. You know, I feel anxiety, I don't want it, and I want to try to change it, you know. And that manifestations of the illness. It's like anxiety within itself isn't a problem, is it? Anxiety within itself isn't a problem. The problem is in the not wanting of the anxiety, or juggling the anxiety. And every time I don't want something, if I don't want anxiety, I'm going to get more anxiety. It's as simple as that. So if I get anxiety, you know, what I've learned through here, through step 11 and meditation, is that I just breathe my way through it. And for respect due to the Isle of Bad Boy. Alright. Keep coming back. Alright. So if I don't want anxiety, what I get is anxiety.
You don't know what was speaking to.
Yeah, man, that's cool, man. Don't worry. Don't worry, it's not a problem. It's not a problem, man.
I'm speaking to all of them, so I'm speaking to you. Speaking to you,
you're I know you watch my appreciate it. You know, and it's the same, I suppose, like for thoughts, isn't it? Not wanting a feeling, not wanting a thought. And the problem is even when we're thinking about not thinking, we're thinking about not thinking. So we have to appreciate that we're always going to think. You know, which is what it's what I do with that again, isn't it? You know, the thing is like, you know, and I'm not able to do it all the time, I'm not able to apply it all the time, but I've been given some information now. What I need to do with that is apply it on some level. You see, the thing is that life was so painful without the information that I learned here, the information I learned through the steps, the information that I was giving off other people. You know, and all I want to be is the best person I can be. I just know that when I get obstructed by my self-centered thinking and it all becomes about me, mine and mine, you know, me, I and mine, you know, selfish, self-centered, you know, it's like, that's not the way I want to be. You know, and when I look at freedom from active addiction, you know, many of us in here have got freedom from active addiction, and we're really blessed for that, you know. And but, you know, freedom from active addiction for me to me is in the same way that the principles of things like powerlessness and manageability, you know, are far, you know, they go on, you know, everything means, so even the readings that we read at the beginning of the meeting means something more, means something, you know, I hear something, you know. But it's like, where are we at, Dean? 29. I'm going to start winding it up in a minute anyway, mate. 10 minutes is a long time, you know. It's funny, actually, because I'm not doing too bad, you know, but I don't know about anybody else, but it feels sometimes that when the longer you've been here, you've got sort of less to say, like, you know, it's like, oh, there isn't a need. I feel like, you know, as long as my information that I'm giving, as long as the message that I'm carrying is a pure NA message, you know, a source, you know, in the way that it's meant to be, you know, and I say, I'm not going to say should be, but meant to be, ought to be, could be. You know, whatever it needs to be. My experience is that I came to NA broke after 27 years of using 6 prison sentences and 3 treatment centres. You know, I was an intravenous crack and heroin user, that used a lot of fucking, what do you call it, a lot of Valiant, you know, stuff like that, methadone, you know, major scripts. And I came here and I knew very little and I was very fearful and I was very scared. And I've been here and there's a passage in our in our new book, what's it called now? It's got very... Living Clean book, yeah, and it's called The Keys to Freedom. And The Keys to Freedom, for me, you know, if I talk, think about The Keys of Freedom or a vision of hope even, and you talked about hope and a vision of hope, you know, and I just think to myself, you know, The Keys to Freedom, freedom from active addiction. So what is it that frees me of active addiction? Because active addiction, if addiction is in the mind, then actually, and we keep saying it's got nothing to do with drugs, then it's got to have something to do with something else. And so therefore it is about the mind. And so freedom from active addiction and addiction as a disease of addiction needs to be something that I need to be free from that isn't about using. Using was just a symptom of that thing that I had. You know, and the keys to that is about being able to, at some point or another, separate myself from the noise and the bullshit that goes on and, you know, not keep buying into it. See, I really believe that really doesn't matter what I'm thinking if I'm able just to get out or not. And it doesn't really matter what I'm feeling, that's all irrelevant too. Big deal, so what? Fucking where, you know, all that. You're like, you're feeling something. Whoa, what do you want? Fucking badge of honour. You know what I mean? It's like, what I really believe is what I'm doing. Who am I being? How am I able to show up? You know, it's like, I just need to keep being and doing, being the best person that I can be. And it's that simple. And all the rest is just wasting time where I don't need to waste time. Energy that's spent on trying to be different to what is right here, right now. And what is right here, right now is out of a head full of thoughts born of the disease of addiction that want to put me down, that sit into my core beliefs about myself and they're very irrational and they never even fucking happened. You know, I'm not a bad person. I don't even want to sit here and say I'm a sick, sick, sick person. I know that I have the disease and that's why I keep coming back here. What's that, man?
The lead tower.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Look at that.
Yes, mate. Yes. You know, I don't want to stand here and say that I'm sick, sick, sick. You know, I know that I'm sick. I know that I have the disease of addiction, but I also know I'm fucking far better than that. You know, and I also think that, you know, for many of us in this room, we spend many hours contributing to the community, giving to the community. You know, for me, the focus needs to be on who I truly am, and who I truly am is my actions. You know. My willingness to keep coming here, my willingness to be of service, my willingness to keep giving. That's who I am. My willingness to get up in the morning. You know, a gangster isn't the guy that I used to think walking around the landing, you know, giving it a large one. You know, expending loads of fucking energy on trying to be somebody that I wasn't as a result of my head saying that I didn't fit in. You know, and this is the truth. I know that I had a sense of that stuff being my reality because why was I trying to be somebody else if it wasn't true? You know, so I can't say that I don't identify with that stuff when my motivation is around what it is that I'm hearing. So I'm not good enough, I don't fit in, well let me become someone else. I tell you what, I'll become a punk, a mod, a football hooligan, a fucking bad boy, whatever you want me to be. I'll just do the fucking lot for you, you know. And if I have to do that, then I'm not at any way acknowledging that's a thought, it's just a thought. You know, I'm believing and being everything that my age tells me, and I'm not. I'm far better than that. You guys have taught me how to love, you've taught me how to live, you've taught me how to be responsible, reliable, productive, caring, empathic, you know. And I can be all that. Not all the time, but I can be for most of the time. And it's far cry from where I was. You know, I'm going to keep coming back here because I need to be here. Thanks for letting me share, and I'll leave it there. Thank you.